Move ahead to item six, consider and take possible action to authorize CEO to execute a contract with PARS for our OPEP trust. Christina? Oh, okay.
It's me.
It's you? Okay.
So earlier this year, we had a discussion with the board on the retiree healthcare that we offer employees in the CSERA office. And it was decided to pursue a pre-funding option for OPEP benefits. At that time, we decided to take a look at if this was something that we were to manage internally, what that would take as far as energy and time and costs from a legal perspective and administrative and investment perspective. We've conducted that analysis as well as issuing an RFP, and we had four respondents to that RFP. We had a couple of finalists that were interviewed, and from that we came up with a finalist, which was PARS. PARS has served a number of other plans in municipalities, and we're here today to talk more about PARS.
Okay. I have a few questions. My memory may be foggy on this when we discussed it previously. But so you're saying, is it with PEPRA employees only that we will not provide health care at retirement?
No, so there's a couple of different retiree health benefits that we have. For the new, you know, the newly hired folks after the date, we have, we do have retiree health care. Since we have CalPERS insurance, they receive the PEPRA minimum.
Okay.
If they meet all of the eligibility requirements, they can receive that benefit.
Okay, so it
applies to
new hires?
It applies to all employees. So it's the ones getting the older benefit, and it's the ones getting the newer benefit as well.
Okay.
Anything else before? Okay. Andrew Brown is here.
Hi, good morning. I'm Andrew Brown. I'm a director of investments with Highmark Capital.
And I'm also here, Jennifer Meza, supervisor consulting team, and I work directly at PARS.
So just for disclosure, you probably saw in here, Andrew actually manages Central Sands OPEB account. So with that, you have
Westies too.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it.
Multiple.
We'd like to hear from both of you later on.
Do I need to be in the room or should I?
Well, so you should have a pretty good idea, I think.
So the floor is yours, Andrew.
All right.
Perfect. I'm going to go ahead and start off by talking about the administration portion of the program, and then I'm going to send it over to Andrew to discuss all the good details when it comes to the investments on there. So if we could go ahead and flip over to slide number two. Slide number two on the presentation that we provided you gives you an idea of the different parties that will be involved under this trust. I belong to the company on the left-hand side. Many of you may know my colleague, Mitch Barker. Him and myself, along with five other consultants, assist the administration of all the public agencies that we run up and down California. Our offices are in Orange County. We have over 850 public agencies here in California and have over $3 billion under our administration. So we're very happy with that. We'll talk about which clients we have under that as well. Two other parties that are involved in this trust is, one is U.S. Bank. They are the trustee. They are safeguarding the assets for the exclusive purpose of retiree health care. If anything were to happen to PARS or to your agency, U.S. Bank would protect that from any creditors and make sure that that is actually distributed only for this purpose that you're establishing the trust. The third provider on there is Highmark Capital Management. They assist with the investment management on the account. I will have Andrew talk a little bit more about them in case you are unfamiliar with that provider directly. Okay. So those are the three providers within the program. If you look at the next three pages, slide number three, four, and five, these are all of the different clients that we have under our program for this specific plan. You see the cities, for example, some in the area, City of Richmond, the counties, Contra Costa County is one of them. Then you see the special districts on page four. You have Central Contra Costa Sanitary District, Central Contra Costa Transit Authority, Contra Costa Mosquito Vector Control, the Contra Costa Superior Court, and West County Waste Water District, to name a few of the ones in the surrounding area on there. And then the last page you'll see, of course, our school districts and our community colleges in the area. This is a great reference for any of the programs that we ever administer. We always like to provide you with this. It's really the best way for you to know how are we doing, what are our plans, services in other areas. Okay. If we go to slide number 6, now we talk a little bit more about our Section 115 trust. The 115 trust with PARS does have a private letter ruling confirming from the IRS that any earnings on the account will not have any tax consequences to your agency nor to the participating employees under this program on there. The contributions are going to be very flexible. There are no minimum contributions required. You choose when to put money into the account. You choose the amount to put in there. There's no restrictions on that. The reimbursements are very flexible as well. You could choose up to 2 years worth of a reimbursement from what you're currently paying out to retirees. You can reimburse your district or pay the healthcare provider directly, or you can use these assets to pay for actuarial valuations or audits. Anything retiree healthcare related can be paid out of this trust. Very flexible to be able to take the money out from here. Okay. Slide number 7. We provide a full service program. If you are part of one of our programs, hopefully we've provided you the best service and you're here happy and smiling at us here today. We do have a full service. Of course, Andrew Brown is the investment management team on there. They will provide you with an investment guidelines document, be available for meetings, conference calls, anything that you need. Andrew is available, whether he responds within an hour or within 24 hours at the latest, and hopefully you've seen that service at your other agencies as well on there. At PARS, we provide you full service as well on there. We will always have somebody from staff assist you with any administrative questions. We have audits that we provide you on there. Any analysis that you need, we will be there to service your account.
Yes. How does analytical compare with actuarial?
Okay, perfect. So your actuarial evaluation is what you do every 2 years to determine what your liabilities are, what your discount rate is. What we do is we do it on the funding side. So we will say, how much are you anticipating to put in? And what can you expect to see within the next 5, 20, 30 years based on the portfolio models that we have? So we do more on the funding side versus on the actual actuarial liability side.
So you would take the actuarial valuation and project its findings? Is that?
We would take what assets you potentially may want to put into a trust and forecast where those assets would be in the next 20 to 30 years based on the portfolio strategies that we have available.
Okay. To the extent that our actuary would also do that, would you coordinate? It just sounds like there's a
your actuarial can do that, but you'd get a fee or charged for such a projection. So some agencies will just go direct. They have more factors to put into play. We can do something like that without any additional fees.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. If we go to slide number 8, now we take a look at your actuarial valuation so that we can take a look at what your liabilities are, what your discount rate is, and then we can take a look at the investments and how that would work. Your latest actuarial valuation as of January 1st, 2017, gives you a discount rate or a long-term rate of return of about 3.75. That is what is expected to be in your general funds or so forth, receiving since you don't have a trust in place. Once you do set up a Section 115 trust, your actuary will provide you with a bit of a higher discount rate to give you credit because now you're able to diversify these assets directly on there. Your liability at this point in time was $7.5 million on there. Because you don't have a 115 trust, there are no assets that can be accounted for in this valuation. If you do have in your general funds money set aside, it doesn't count towards these valuations. So by establishing a 115 trust, putting money aside, you will see your liability reduced directly on your valuations. But since you don't have any assets put into any trust, your unfunded liability remains at $7.5 million. Your annual required contribution, what your actuary states that you should be, a recommended amount that you should be putting into a trust if you do establish one, is currently at about $858,000. It is not a required amount. It is really just to a forecast to try to meet your liabilities within the next 20 to 30 years on there. Okay. And then your annual benefit payments, what you're currently paying out to retirees, is approximately $120,000. That number will stay the same. That's what your retirees have already earned and what you pay them. But once you establish a trust, you do get a little bit more credit on that discount rate. You'll see your liabilities lowering on that. And again, these are done every 2 years, so you'll see the next update once you establish the trust and once you do an evaluation.
I have a question for our staff. Is the $7.5 million currently within the ambit of our overall unfunded liability? Is it included in our current?
No.
Understood. So this is a separate liability apart from any other liability.
Apart from the pension valuation.
Yeah. I'll make sure.
And just a clarification point, since we're talking about pay-as-you-go, Jerry had mentioned about it's for the folks getting the older benefit as well as the newer benefit. One caveat to that is when we became an independent employer, the trust is really for those that became employees and retired, you know, as of 1/1/15 and on. Prior to that, those retirees from Cicero that were county employees were still considered part of the county trust and would not, those benefits would not be paid through this trust. Those benefits would still be a pay-as-you-go to the county for that piece.
Those are retirees as of 1/1/15 and
yeah,
proceeding.
Yeah, correct.
Anyone who was active, even if they retired 1 year later, is part of ours.
Correct. But if they retired in November of 14, that benefit wouldn't be flowing through this trust. We're still doing a pay-as-you-go to the county. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Sort of asking Scott one more step. Will this liability be part of our balance sheet recognition?
Yes.
It'll be on the balance sheet.
Yeah. Correct. Yes. In the past, it was not directly on there, but new GASB regulations do require it now to be directly on there. Yes. The last thing I'll say about your valuation, the great thing about it, establishing a 115 trust, not only will you get credit on your discount rate, but we have seen for at least 1% increase in your discount rate, your liabilities reduced between 10 to 12% on there. It's another great benefit of putting a trust together. Line number 9 on your presentation. Here are some of the advantages of our program directly. As I mentioned, you'll have U.S. Bank, which is the fifth largest commercial bank in the nation, assisting you with this program. Not only that, but Highmark Capital Management is a sub-advisor of U.S. Bank. They're directly under Union Bank. So now you have two of the largest banks in the nation providing you with oversight protection directly on there. You do have the blessing of the IRS private letter ruling confirming that there will be no tax consequences on there. You do have flexibility when it comes to the investments. Andrew will review all of the investment options that you have available. If for some reason you do not like our services, we only ask that you give us an opportunity. There are no termination costs. You simply just give us a 90-day notice and we can terminate the program directly on there. We make the adoption process very easy. We provide you with signature-ready documents for your legal counsel to go ahead and review directly on there and try to make the process as easy as possible for you. We know everyone here has a full-time job, and we want to make sure we make this process as easy as possible on there. Okay. Next slide number 10. We know you went ahead and looked at different providers, of course, and we always want to compare ourselves with the different providers. This is our biggest competitor, CalPERS. Here are 6 reasons why we believe that you should choose us. Obviously, the recommendation from staff as well. Number 1 is our outperformance versus CalPERS. In a couple of pages, you'll see line by line the 1, 3, and 5-year returns. We have outperformed them directly on there. Another reason is you have a dedicated portfolio manager, Andrew Brown. Your staff can call, email, text him at any point in time, maybe not after 10, he likes to get some sleep, but you can certainly reach him at any point in time directly on there. We do have a 2-year reimbursement versus CalPERS. They only allow you for a 1-year reimbursement out of the trust, so you have more flexibility with money coming out of the trust directly. You have different portfolio strategies, up to 5, and within those 5, you have an active and passive strategy, as well as customized options directly on there for you. It's fully, the program is fully transparent. All of the information is directly available to you. Your staff has done a great job researching this. They've asked us for a numerous amount of reports. We certainly will always provide that information directly to them. And lastly, we have a SOC 1 report versus CalPERS that shows our operations and how we deal with all of the different administrative tasks.
Jennifer, just before we leave this general section, I want to confirm what I think is probably fairly clear, but just to have you confirm it. The multi-employer plan pension has been disastrous to a number of employers who end up funding the benefits of those other employers who ended up not paying their full contribution amounts and or went bankrupt. We don't have any obligation under this and under any circumstances to fund anybody else's benefit.
Correct. This is completely your own account that you're going to have. There's no cross-sharing of liabilities, earnings, or fees on there directly. Okay.
Multiple as opposed to multi.
Correct.
There's a big difference here.
Exactly. This just means that the administrative process is streamlined, where you don't have to go out and get your own private letter ruling from the IRS. We've provided that on a multiple employer basis, so it covers everybody within the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The last slide, slide number 11, just transitions into Andrew Brown's portion. We just want you to be aware at the adoption process and ongoing throughout the years that you are with us. Andrew Brown will always be discussing with staff, with your board, the different risk tolerances, the different goals that you have in mind, the timing of contributions and reimbursements. And with that, he's going to provide recommendations for the best portfolio or a customized portfolio for you. He's also going to provide you with an investment guidelines document that really is a game plan for your district to know why are we doing this, what is the asset allocation. If staff changes, there's a game plan there that your board has established, that staff has established, so there's no confusion on why and what we're doing here directly. I'll turn it over to Andrew.
Good. Now, let me start off on page 12, if I could, and just give you a little bit of background on our firm. So with respect to Highmark Capital Management, we're headquartered locally here in San Francisco. I live in the county. I live in Clayton. It's a modest-sized firm within a bigger organization, Union Bank. 44 of us, 27 of us have CFA charters, 23 years of average industry experience. Next year, we celebrate our 100th anniversary. Much of that experience has been within the charter of the bank, working with our trust clients. But certainly going back to 1994, we have partnered with PARS to manage investment assets, trust assets, pension assets primarily, for clients mainly in California, although we do have some business in Texas. You'll see in the middle of the page there's $15.5 billion assets as of 9/30. After October, maybe a little bit less than that. But of the 15.5, about $2.5 billion is related to PARS. So within Highmark's domain, PARS is our largest client. And so of that 2.5, roughly about $1.7 billion is OPEB-related plans. So this has been a focus of our firm pretty much going back to 2007. That's when we first started to begin OPEB engagements. So 1/7 of the $15 billion is OPEB. So this is exactly what we've been doing for a good long period of time. I made the analogy when I was with Jennifer back in August for the staff interviews that this engagement sort of has a feel of a lawyer who seeks to hire another lawyer to represent themselves, right? So certainly the lawyer could probably defend themselves if it was that kind of a case, but if there's a variety of valid reasons why one lawyer would seek outside representation, and that's great. However, it's not lost on us that certainly the lawyer that's hiring certainly might be involved with the design, the implementation, and how the case might be run. And I think that we're open to that. You know, Todd's here, Rusty's here, and I think that they would attest to our ability as an organization to work with our clients to come up with a flexible design if there are certain reasons why, you know, an asset allocation might be tilted one way, You know, if the time horizon dictates a certain risk tolerance be observed. I think we've demonstrated that over the decade plus that we've worked with our clients. And so really, I'm here to share with you that we as an organization are flexible in how we would work with Sisera. You know, if you were a typical client, I'd go back to page 8, and we can kind of go back to page 8. And I would share with the board that, okay, well, given your at least on paper here, the numerical target of 7%, if that is your discount rate, PARS, Highmark, we offer 5 investment objectives, spanning very conservative investment asset allocation models to more aggressive asset allocation models. Our most aggressive asset allocation model is something we call capital appreciation, which is roughly 75% stocks, 25% bonds and cash. We believe over a multi-decade period of time that would attain a 6.8% rate of return. That's somewhere in the ballpark of 7%. You know, I'm sort of fast-forwarding and fast-breaking the discussion. That might be one consideration that I would offer the board. But you're not a typical client. And in fact, you know, I've read the CIO's staff report, and you've already crunched the numbers, and you have your own assumptions. And in fact, you've also come up with you know, a possible separate account asset allocation. And so I'm here to say that certainly I can work with staff to come up with an asset allocation policy that has some range around these target you know, tactical points. So we certainly can do that for you. Typically, though, we offer two platforms. We offer one platform that is predominantly actively managed managers, mutual funds, if you will. And then we offer a platform that is solely index-based. It seems from reading the report that you might be favoring maybe more of a passive approach. We can certainly do that. But I know in the case of the district's portfolio as well as the county's portfolio, we've actually implemented maybe more of a hybrid approach, where across many asset classes, mainly on the equity side, we have both you know, passive products for large cap, mid cap, small cap, as well as maybe some outside managers who have an active approach. We can certainly do that for Sisera as well. So that's really the main point that I wanted to communicate. Certainly, Jennifer's already touched on client servicing. I think that, you know, Rusty could certainly attest that, you know, quarterly, the middle month of every quarter, first Thursday, I know where I'm going to be at 8:30 in the morning. That's at the county offices, and twice a year, based on when Jim Nedgely wants to have a meeting, I'll be looking at Todd. So that's what we come to the table. I feel good about you know, being from the county, working with so many of the county providers that Jennifer highlighted, and I look forward to working with the board on this engagement.
Any questions from trustees? Henry, all right, sorry.
Rusty, you're happy with their services?
Oh, we are. They're doing well for us.
Okay.
Yes.
And can you share with us what model you chose?
The moderate.
Moderate? Yeah. Okay.
We're in moderate as well.
In moderate. And a particular reason for either of you to have selected moderate over a more aggressive long-term strategy?
Exactly.
So we can tolerate.
That was a board decision.
I see, yeah. Board of Supervisors does not want to have any risk involved in OPIP. And as we're continuing to pay, you know, we're putting in our $20 million a year to pay down our OPEB, other things, we take a very, I don't want to say conservative, but responsible approach to ensure that the money's going to stay there. We're putting that much money in.
Give us an idea, percentage-wise, just really broad brush, how many of the clients would select a moderate approach as opposed to more of an equity long-term aggressive approach?
Yeah, the discount rate will typically be the driver of investment selection. Given that most discount rates are between 6 and 6.5%, the number one popular selected investment allocation for OPEB is the balanced allocation. Call it 35%-ish, mm-hmm. So a little bit more than a third. Second one would be moderate, and some have gone moderately conservative. A couple handful have selected the capital appreciation investment objective, which is the most aggressive one that we offer.
And have they been, I mean, we may not have enough of a track record, you may not, but how is that, is it meeting their expectations, the more aggressive approach?
Yes, but, a few of those started back in 2008, and while, yeah, maybe 75% equity allocation in 2008 was painful, 2009 to today, they've made it back in spades, and so where they are right now is roughly probably 8.5% annualized rate of return, which that feels pretty good to them over a long period of time. Now, do we think that 8.5% annualized going forward is possible? No, but where they have been over that period of time, they feel rewarded.
Okay, thank you.
It looks like on page 18, fees are based upon invested assets, is that?
So fees are based on assets in the trust.
In the trust, so today it's zero.
Exactly.
But we put round figures 800,000 in, and we're talking about 60 basis points in year one on 800. Is that approximately the number?
That's dead on the number. And there would also be, if we were to buy, a mutual fund portfolio, there would be embedded expenses with that. If we were to, invest in passive funds, there would be embedded expenses in that. I believe in the staff report, there is maybe more of a focus on passive. Right now, the capital appreciation embedded expenses for a wholly 100% passive portfolio is roughly about 15 basis points, 0.15%. So that would be an additional expense that you'd want to be aware of. But that's it.
Did you have something?
If I may, I'm sure. Harvey Wiederman, outside fiduciary counsel. I just wanted Jennifer to drill down on Mr. Phillips' question to get it clear. Will we have our own 115 trust segregated, or does the money go into one big CARS trust, a single trust, and we have an accounting, but it's all commingled funds?
So that comes a little bit related with the investments, because you do have the option to have an individual account where it's not going to go into a pooled account. But if it is into a pooled account, it's still accounting-wise separated for fee investment asset purposes separated. But in an individual account, there is no, you're not in a pool.
I'm making a distinction between a trust and an account. Of the bookkeeping, okay. Accounting thing. A trust is a standalone employer vehicle. Is that what we would be investing in?
So you are in a multiple employer trust, not in a single employer trust. Yes.
It's a disadvantage of going into a, is there a disadvantage of not going into a pool? Like, what is the advantage of pulling the money versus not doing it?
I think first and foremost, having your own separate account, you can go online, see if you have the proclivity to do that and see at any one point in time what the asset balance is. I think the biggest advantage is to develop some type of flexibility and customization. If at the end of the day we decide to do something that's represented in the staff report in the far right-hand column, this looks like nothing. Well, I can't say that. This would be very different than what a custom or a standard pool would look like. So if we have a separate account, we can do something like this.
What's it? Why do people go into a pool? What's the advantage of going into the pool versus not?
I would say that there's administrative efficiencies for a pool, but the administrative efficiencies for us. If I and my team can manage, 25, 30 agencies within one portfolio, that makes life a little bit easier. But if I had 30 individual accounts, there would be a little bit more time factor involved. So
I mean, is the fee different if we go?
There's no fee difference. No. So you're not paying anything additional for a separate account.
Can you walk back to what Harvey was talking about on the difference between the single trust?
So a single employer trust is one where you go out and develop the plan document, the trust document. You have to go out and get a private letter ruling for your agency only. A single employer trust is available out there, but you don't have the compliance. So if there are any accounting GASB issues, you have to monitor those on your end. You don't have what we have in a multiple employer trust where we have a compliance team monitoring that at the office. We've already gone out and received the IRS ruling. We have a plan document already established, a trust document already established for everyone, all of the entities under our program.
Do new clients go into a single one?
We don't offer a single employer trust.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there might be some confusion around the separate account that you're talking about. The separate account is merely for investment purposes. It's not for, you know, it's not a legal thing. It would still be part of the 115 trust that PARS has, yes. Regardless of whether it's a separate account or we do a passive allocation.
We're talking two different things.
Yeah.
Right.
Any other questions for Andrew or Jennifer? Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
No-brainer.
Okay, Gail?
So I wanted to touch on the investment part of it since there's been a lot of questions about the investment side of this. Originally, we did receive the PARS portfolio, or the PARS package that had a number of different investment data points in there. We did some additional requests of some additional data sets that our investments department ran through and did some different analysis of. And based on that, in here is a memo from Tim. So at this point, I wanted to see if there's any additional questions around the investment side of it. And also, part of it is granting myself the authority to have discretion over the investments of this.
So they're part of Union Bank, but is it normal to have a trust to be separate with like U.S. Bank? Is that instead of using their own Union Bank as a trustee?
Can you say?
They're part of Union Bank. I don't know if Union Bank does like the trustee, and we're using U.S. Bank. But they're part of
Highmark is part of Union. U.S. Bank is the custodian.
Right, but is it, do they have to be, so in other words, why wouldn't they use Union Bank to save cost? Does it have to be a separate company as a trustee?
Harvey seems to be indicating yes.
The trustee has to be separate.
Okay. Any other questions for Gail or Tim? Oh, Rusty.
Do we plan to fund the full ARC each year, A58?
So kind of the next steps of what we were thinking about is the beginning of next year, we'll come back with an actual evaluation of the OPEB with the ARC and that report, and you know the board can decide at that point to fund that amount. In the budget, which will be presented later today, there was a placeholder of $700,000 that was placed in the budget. Just because we had a sense that that's what the board was wanting to do, so we wanted to have some sort of placeholder in there so that we didn't have to do a huge mid-year budget adjustment at the beginning of the year.
And related to that, would you plan to fund one time this year, or would you split the cost over quarterly? Or
I think it's something we'd take a look at. Yeah. Yeah, and I did, this has definitely been very much a team effort here at Cicera. Karen has looked at it on the participated on the legal part of it, Tim, investments, Henry on the accounting and auditing side. You know, he's had a number of discussions with our external auditor on this, as well as Christina in helping to coordinate all these activities and look at it as well. So I wanted to thank the team's effort in this.
And then the last question for now. So we are convinced that it's more cost effective to outsource this than to do it in-house.
Absolutely. Okay. And especially in consideration of, and she touched on it, we're not required to seek from the IRS a private letter ruling, but it's something that we would want to do. And so we took a look at the costs of doing that. and that alone is much higher than their annual fee.
Yeah.
And then on an ongoing basis, you know, taking a look at, you know, the aggregate costs, it makes a lot more sense to have it outsourced.
I might add that the IRS is no longer, I believe, issuing approval letters for individual pension plans. They may be on OPEB. I haven't heard one way or another, but my guess is it'd be incredibly hard now to get one. A single plan letter. Taryn may be more up to date on OPEBs, but they've gone out of that business.
So what is the new company?
I mean, definitely for the pensions, the tax determination letter process has been.
What does a new company do that's never done that before?
You do it without a letter.
Got it.
That's practical matter. And by the way, you've got ongoing requirements as laws change to upgrade pension plans. I mean, that's basic to plans subject to the code. Well, we're subject to the code, but private industry plans. So you don't have a choice of saying we'll stay with just what we've got because the laws keep changing.
Right.
So you're just out of luck. I mean, out of luck in terms of that level of confidence that you're in compliance.
Right.
Harvey, you had something? And then Scott?
Yeah, I guess, just so you know, I've known about PARS for a long time. PARS is highly reputable. They're, you know, and so many people use them, and it's a great alternative. I just wanted to clarify, just so we understand, because John raised a very important issue, so that the board should know that being in a single commingled trust is like being a plan sponsor in CSERA. You know, we depool and, you know, for accounting and actuarial purposes. But understand that if one of our plan sponsors were not able to make its contributions or went bankrupt or something, all the assets of the trust, most of which is funded by the county, are available to answer for those liabilities. And this is the same thing. So it's just like a multi-employer plan, even though we call, you know, all this SACRS systems a multiple employer plans because we have many plan participants. So just so you understand, we're a very small player in PARS, but in the event a big player were to have an inability to fund its liabilities, the entire assets of that trust are available to pay and be tapped for that purpose. Whether they contractually work around that, I don't know. But even though we have multiple employers, and for accounting purposes, we have their own accounts, and so we measure their contributions with their liabilities that they generate, and all that's fine until something goes wrong. And if something goes wrong, basically the county being 80%+ of our assets would end up picking up the cost. So there is a big difference. Most of the other systems that I know of, the county systems in California that have 115 trusts, have their own 115 trust, and then it's administered, and that's used as kind of a feeder fund to pay their OPEB liabilities. So I just wanted to make that clear because I don't know if John's question got.
I thought it was answered the other way.
Yeah, it was directly.
So
your money will not be segregated to pay solely your liabilities. It will, whether you think there's a big risk of that or not, it goes into one big pooled trust.
Even though it's in a separate account.
You'll have an accounting sheet that says, here's your assets and your liabilities, but that will be purely an accounting document. It will not characterize, it will not wall off your assets as just for CSERA liabilities.
That's not the impression I got, though.
Yeah, that certainly didn't come through in the response, and I appreciate the clarification. It may be an unavoidable risk as a practical matter.
It may be, and you may consider it a very minor risk.
But it's a pretty dang important thing to know.
But it's different. It's just different. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Harvey.
Yeah, I had a question for Russ and Candace. In your plan setups, who is delegated the authority to make the investment decision? Like, in our second recommendation, it's the CEO here. Who, you know who makes it in yours?
The authority to make the investment?
Yes.
We have a committee.
Right. There's a whole, we have a finance committee that meets regularly, and Rusty and Lisa and Board of Supes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's sort of where the direction.
It's not one person. It's a committee that makes that recommendation. Or, yeah, we meet quarterly with PARS or Highmark.
It's good to have a lot of friends when you make decisions.
But no, well, and then periodically, you know, as we set the budget every year too, that's where we're making other decisions about how it's going to be funded, and sometimes discussions go into. But primarily, we trust our fiscally conservative staff to make some good decisions for us. No.
And so the same would be true if we went with PERS over PARS.
PERS.
It doesn't matter.
Probably. I don't know how PERS sets it up, because PERS sets up totally different on the pension side. I'm not sure how they handle the OPEB side. On the pension side, they have segregated trusts for each employer. What they do on OPEB, I don't know.
So do you feel comfortable with that risk that Harvey just mentioned?
I think it's fair to say it's de minimis. It's a small risk, but
versus the cost savings of doing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely like everything I heard, and what I didn't understand, I liked until Harvey clarified it.
Damn that, Harvey.
But my reaction at the moment is to go with a PARS.
I think
that makes good sense.
Pensions, it's sort of you're obligated to pay it. For the OPEB, they would just stop giving benefits to that company. Let's say an employer went bankrupt, the employees wouldn't get the benefit anymore. Is that correct?
You'd be obligated to pay it.
Go ahead. I thought medical benefits were not a guarantee as opposed to pension.
Some are.
I was going to say it depends on the contract.
So from my own analogy, can this be an example that I could grasp onto? Tell me if I'm right or wrong. So okay. We have individuals who put into to our retirement system, and we collect their money and we invest it, and it comes out. So they're trusting us to do that, to give them a benefit when they retire. Suddenly the market crashes, we are down, and so we can't pay the benefit to the employee at 100%. So in order to keep it going, we offer them 70%. Is that the kind of analysis that compares to PERS? We're putting our money into this OPEB. There's other people putting their money in. A big person goes kaboombo, they lose 30% of the money. So those people that are in OPEB only get 40% or 50% of the money that they originally put in. Is that a comparable analysis, or I'm off base? Tell me.
Only with a kaboombo.
You don't like my language. You don't like the kaboombo.
If I may, it's not.
Okay, that's what I need.
It's not, because that haircut, if you will, for retirees is a peculiar part of the PERS law that allows PERS not to be on the hook for the 100% if the employer, that's solely in the PERS law. It's not, has nothing to do with this kind of
So I'm wrong in that analysis. Yeah, thank you. That's, I just need to know whether we're thinking right or wrong. Okay.
Maybe another way to respond to Jerry, presumably the entire trust would have to be out of money before next month's payment was not made.
Okay.
Okay. That would be, we're talking about $2.5 billion. Okay, against the obligations at this point, when you have no required contribution in, remember that's zero to whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You really have a very different world in that as to when you would stop making a payment to an individual employer. Who's a part of the plan, it's very different from the pension side.
Yeah, okay.
I don't understand, like you said, in this pool, you got Company X is bankrupt, and they have employees, and they still have to offer them OPEB because they have a contract that says so, versus one that didn't. So why would it? I guess all employers would sit there, have a contract saying it's guaranteed because it wouldn't cost them anything, right? They go bankrupt. I don't get that part.
Remember that the OPEB liability remains with each individual plan sponsor. This is merely a funding mechanism. So this is a way of coming together in an investment vehicle to pre-fund these and get a, you know, an actuarial discount rate to apply to the liabilities. The OPEB trust doesn't really affect the liabilities. They remain with the plan sponsors. So if the trust is taken out, the liability remains. And you go back to pay as you go or some other mechanism.
The way Harvey's explaining, but another company goes, we're liable for their payments. That's how I'm understanding what you're saying.
No, we're not liable for their payments.
Not liable, it's coming out of our investment. That's what you were saying.
It could come out of the trust.
Could come out of the trust.
Which would be our money.
Which would be your money.
Whatever assets we have in it.
Right.
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 But I just want, you know, I just want you to go in with eyes open because I don't want John's question to have been answered in a confusing way. Could clarify so you understand the answer to the question. Then make a risk analysis and decide, well, that's likely never going to happen. Don't worry about it. We don't have that much money. And get on with it. I just want to make it clear.
Scott?
Had the right information.
Question for Karen. It sounded like the contractual arrangement has a termination for convenience clause, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
Is that your understanding? I mean, is that so? In other words, if we're wading into this swamp,
for
there's a lot
purpose.
Of questions. And,
yes.
And
yes.
If there was a desire to get out of it, we can simply do a 90-day notice.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Yeah. And
it sounded that way. I just didn't. Right. I didn't have.
And if we're, you know, a couple years in and we're kind of like, I don't know about this PARS. PERS looks so much better, we could switch to PARS in a couple years if we wanted.
Okay.
Switch to PERS.
Or some other vendor.
All right. I'm prepared to make a motion.
She
hasn't got nothing to do,
right?
Do it internally.
You've been trying. So.
No, I've had all my questions answered by everyone else's. So.
All right.
Great minds, huh, Will?
So does this also include discussion, your motion, about the investment strategy, or is that a separate part of the discussion? The motion, I take it, is about PARS. Fine.
The motion I intend to make is on page 3 of the report under recommendation. There are 4 specific.
Because I'd like to discuss a little bit more about the investment strategy.
Well, so point 2, I asked this question earlier. Bullet point 2 appoints, the motion would appoint the CEO as our planned administrator, whose authority shall include the selection of an appropriate investment option. That's why I asked Candace and Rusty about how they decide investments, right? Okay. So under this proposal, Gail would make that investment option decision before us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's options how to do it. Maybe you use a committee. But right now, as we have it framed, it's the CEO.
You could do separate motions and have a discussion on each one of the
whatever you want to do, you know, it's,
yeah,
I'm fine if we want to talk about that issue now, that's fine too. I mean,
Wherever it makes it's appropriate to put it in, I'd just like to discuss more about the options.
It doesn't look like it's part of the proposed resolution.
No, but it does suggest, the motion does suggest we're leaving it up to Gail.
Yes.
With Tim's assistance to select the option.
Right, that's correct.
And so with that in mind, the board's left out of that discussion. And I'd like to have a little more conversation about that. So, I'm not trying to throw
me. I would actually. I don't mind them making the decision, but before the decision is final, they come to the board and say, "This is what we are deciding to do," and they give the board the opportunity to say yay or nay on the investments. And so that modifies
the motion.
Yeah,
or would require a modification.
So, a couple things. Obviously, that wouldn't be a decision that I solely make on my own. It would.
Right.
The intention is that it would be in consultation with the CIO as well. You know, when you look at the dollar amounts, you know, they are significant, but not to the level of our pension fund, obviously.
Right.
And you know, what we're looking at is we do have approximately $2.5 million. That is set aside. It's not in a trust, so the value, you know, it can't be included in the valuation. So we were hoping to move that $2.5 million into the PARS account, so that when they do the valuation, that could be included. So it is something that we were hoping, if possible, to get the account set up by the end of the year and put that money in there. So
I'm assuming you would do the process you just described, which is that you're going to discuss it with the CIO. You're going to have a thoughtful discussion before the investment option is made. I think what Jerry's suggesting is there a role for board approval, ratification, approval, however we might frame it, so that we end up ultimately saying yes, we agree with that, or no, we don't. Is that?
Yeah, I'm prepared to go ahead and support the motion, but I guess I'd like to have a little bit more conversation on the part of the rest of the group about how they feel about the allocation of the investment, or at least get some input at this particular point. I'm sensing, I mean, it was, you know, moderate, everybody else said moderate, not everybody else, but I'm sorry, you said moderate, Candace said moderate. That sounds like, and I'm a belt and suspenders guy, I get it, but this seems to me to be something that we might be able to be more aggressive about and lean a little bit more toward the appreciation. And it sounds like from Tim's memo, that's kind of what you're talking about too.
Would you like me to go over the memo?
Yeah,
please. I defer to the group. But.
No, that'd be helpful.
Yeah. Okay.
More information is always better.
Yeah, I just to provide a little bit of directionality of why we're thinking what we're thinking here. And the reason it's delegated is, you know, largely operational, but also we want to have we want to get the buy-in on PARS and then have that conversation with their investment team and see where we land there. But I did prepare a memo for the board outlining the moderate balance and capital appreciation implementation approaches as offered by PARS, their standard pooled fund vehicles, as well as a custom approach that's a little bit more of a reflection of where the pension fund asset beliefs line up there. But I think, you know, it's important to keep in mind the three goals I outlined from the investment option standpoint. One, these are long-dated liabilities. That long-datedness means that we can have more growth exposure, we can withstand more volatility in exchange for, in a longer expected or a higher expected long-term rate of return. We're putting the initial $800,000 in. We've got $2.5 million. This might grow to $7 or $8 million over time. The marginal liability is farther out in the future than our pension fund liabilities.
Right.
Our pension fund liabilities have a duration of about 14, 15 years. This, Christina, do you recall, or Gail, from Milliman's report, what the duration of the liabilities was? It was a bit further out
than
that.
It was further out, yeah.
I want to say like 20, but roughly, 4 to 5 years longer than our pension fund liabilities. In terms of recognizing that this is nobody's day job, this is an additional responsibility, we wanted to keep it simple. And keep it simple for us really went back to, let's have a rules-based implementation approach that's largely passively oriented. We don't want to spend a lot of time underwriting why an active manager is underperforming on a $100,000 slice. $100,000 is important. It just doesn't move the needle relative to managing $8 billion of the pension fund or taking care of 20,000 plan participants. This is a small, modest piece. We want to keep the degrees of freedom shrunk down. And the last piece was, we might want to align this with Cicera's investment beliefs as expressed in the pension fund. That's the custom mix there. Mm-hmm. That's where we've taken a very valuation-based view of saying, if a market is cheap, we're going to overweight it. If a market is expensive, we're going to underweight it. And that's largely led to currently a long-term view that the U.S. market is expensive, emerging markets are cheap. That can lead to volatility. We'll talk about that later today. But we might end up something like that. So we'd want to have a conversation with Andrew. If the board approves PARS, we'd have a conversation with Andrew and say, talk to us about where your asset mixes align with our beliefs, where your asset mixes align with our goals for simplicity, and where they align with our investment views there, and make a selection on that. They've already expressed a willingness to offer us a separate account at no additional fee. We would implement that via index funds and ETFs, keep it passive, or we might just go into their capital appreciation or balanced approach, something of that nature. But we have stress tested these according to the various capital market assumptions. That's what you're seeing in the memo there. Obviously, as we go out on the risk spectrum, a downside event hurts more. In a 2008, these underperform. Long-term rates of return are incrementally higher as we go out there. I will say that the Verisk capital market assumptions are a bit more pessimistic than the Milliman capital market assumptions. So when we do the valuation, I mean, every consultant has a little bit different view of the world. The Milliman capital market assumptions are going to probably come pencil out to roughly 50 basis points higher per mix than what the Verisk capital market assumptions are.
So if I look on page 3 of your memo, I mean, it suggests, not exact numbers, I understand, it's just a scattergram of some sort, that the custom mix would be very similar, at least in terms of, if not design, expectation, with the capital appreciation market. So I guess what I'm suggesting is that, unlike the more moderate approach, and because of our time horizon, I'd be more comfortable leaning in that direction and taking a higher risk on these assets because of the time horizon, and then just taking the moderate belt and suspenders approach, which is my thought.
Mm-hmm. Can you remind me on our investment policy, how much authority do you have to invest? What's the amount that you can invest without coming before the board?
Anything below $100 million per relationship.
Yeah. Okay. And when I look at the Milliman valuation that we got in February, if we had a discount rate of 7, the total overall liability is $4.7 million. So we're not talking, I mean, I'm not trying to be flippant about millions of dollars, but we entrust Tim, who works with Gail, and that team with a lot more. I'm totally comfortable with the recommendation that we give the CEO, make the CEO the plan administrator with the authority to select the investment options.
I am too. I just wanted to
conversation
about what the comfort level was, not on the delegation, but in terms of the approach.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it was a good conversation.
So we've cleared that up. So I'm prepared to move ahead. Do we want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to move that we, if there's no objection, I'll put it all in the same motion. Authorize the CEO to execute a contract with Public Agency Retirement Services for other post-employment benefit trust fund management services. 2, that we appoint the CEO as Cesera's plan administrator for the program, whose authority shall include the selection of an appropriate investment option. 3, adopt Board of Retirement Resolution 2018-4, approving the adoption of the PARS Public Agency's Post-Employment Benefits Trust for the purpose of pre-funding OPEB obligations. And 4, approve the transfer of the reserve amount currently held for OPEB matters, approximately $2.5 million, into the PARS account after it's set up.
Could you repeat that? Just kidding. No, I'm prepared to second the motion, but I guess I would like to have one last thought, not on this item, as to whether or not you folks had any concerns about the contract. Did you make major modifications to the contract?
Were there
sticky issues? You weren't involved.
Were
you
involved? And I was initially either.
So Candace did it all.
Sure. My predecessor was involved before.
Yeah. Oh, got it.
Okay. I came in 2011, which is when we kicked off the program.
Okay, I'll second the motion.
Okay, motion.
Just a quick question. I mean, it all sounds fine, and the numbers are not large at all. The one disconcerting thing is her answer to John's question was directly contravening Harvey's comments. I was wondering if maybe we wanted to clarify that, or we could clarify that before or as part of the discretion given to Gail. It seems like a pretty basic question.
We can clarify that with them. In the interview that we had with them, and it's our understanding that it mirrors what Harvey's understanding would be.
That's not at all the impression she gave.
No,
right?
No, we can definitely clarify that, though.
Yeah, in some fairness, I would tell you that gets esoteric to the point that it doesn't. I'm not shocked that she doesn't really understand what would happen if. Something as significant as they ran out of money actually took place. That's just not a world that lots of people in the business think about.
Perhaps they should.
I don't know, yeah.
You and I know everything. I know nothing beyond what you and I have just seen, but it doesn't shock me, I guess.
Okay. Seems like the basic security of our funds would be a question that she should have an answer to.
I'm not disagreeing, but I'm not overly surprised. I'm not viewing it as there are two answers, they would prefer the one I gave, and therefore I won't give the other one. I'm not viewing it that way. And I think if we make the decision to go forward, we're making it on the basis of Harvey's description of what the risks are, and we accept that risk.
Right. In fact, I'm basing it entirely in terms of the discussion we had where Harvey clarified what the status of that trust is relative to the separate account, which is accounting only. We fully understand that.
I thought Tim's point on the liability, if it was similar to that little HR consortium down south, and they went under and they had money in OPEB, they were still the ones who had to pay the benefit if they promised a benefit.
Right.
It's not like PARS is now paying for it. So it seems very dissimilar to what we do.
Employer responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Oppose? Abstain? Motion passes. The board's
recording excerpted.